All right. Well, this is Will.
And this is Chad.
And you're listening to Two Man Congress.
Yee yee.
Alrighty, so Chad, I told you before we started recording that I had a couple of things that I wanted to discuss and wanted to wait till we were on the microphone to bring it up. Are you ready to hear that?
Yes.
Okay, well, so the first thing is that this is the 8th episode.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And so this is something that I read. I don't know how true it is, but I read that after 7 episodes, your podcast is more likely to stick around.
There we go. So we hit that milestone.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to be sticking around a little bit.
There we go.
But the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because, well, I think we should do something for our 10th episode.
Okay. Let's just hear it.
Well, I don't know what yet. That's something that we can discuss in the meantime. But I think it would be fun to do something to, quote unquote, celebrate we're doing.
The 10th episode.
Exactly.
All right. That sounds dope.
And so we would figure that out in our own time and then do it on the 10th episode, whether it's a challenge where one of us has to accomplish something, and if we fail, then we have to do something difficult, or if it's a, I don't know, some kind of game that we could do with a debate or things like that. I haven't thought too much about it, but I do know that on the 10th episode that I want to publish something that will be special.
Yeah. We can make a fun video about it. It should be good.
Yeah. Yeah, we could.
Yeah. Sweet.
So we'll that was the that. First thing. And then the second thing that I wanted to talk about is the format for this particular episode. And so we're going to be focusing on the filibuster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think for this first part, instead of having it all scheduled out what we're going to talk about, I mean, I have a lot of things on my notes that I want to talk about, but we both did a little bit of independent research, a bit of study, and so I thought we could just discuss a little bit about what we learned from our studies and then ask each other questions based off of what we see off of one another's notes.
Okay.
All right. Well, do you just want to talk about what you believe the filibuster is just to start? Or do you want me to start?
I could start. So, all right. From just like what I've known throughout my education and through some of my studies with what the filibuster is, it is an opportunity for the opposite party or for someone that doesn't want a certain bill to pass. They could use it as a tool. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's the about as basic as a definition as there is, and it's the simplest one to understand. It's any action that is taken to prevent a bill from being passed. And so this happens in the Senate. But when you thought of the filibuster before doing any research, was there anything that came to mind of things that you thought about?
My recent memory, I think of the Build Back Better plan and how there's that filibuster between, Senator, what's his name again?
I'm not sure which senator initiated the filibuster, but I know that the filibuster did occur and it did prevent the plan from being passed.
Mm-hmm. There was two Democratic, nominees. I can't remember which two, but that's what I associate with the most common, like that's what I think of when I think of the filibuster right now. There's a couple ones. I think of Rand Paul when he filibustered for 8 hours straight. And there's plenty of others that have gone 23, 20. There's one guy that went 24 hours and 8 minutes.
I think it was 18.
18 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I think that's the record for the filibuster. And that's probably the classic idea of what people think of when they hear about a filibuster. They think of the marathon filibuster, which is talking for hours and hours and hours and having people interchange so that you can take a break or go get a little bit of water. And so most people think of the marathon filibuster, and that's how it was a lot in the olden days. Now the marathon filibuster is kind of just for show. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Senator Cruz reading Green Eggs and Ham as a filibuster. I mean, it wasn't technically a filibuster, but he did introduce it as if it was a filibuster and he read for 8 hours, including eggs and ham. And it's all for show. It's all just to have a little bit of flair so that the media can have something to laugh about and talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get like a ton of social media posts. Like, there's this one video that I watched a few years ago where this lady read Twilight for a filibuster.
Oh, yeah. That's an actual thing. I think Senator Cruz might have actually done that during his filibuster, too. Yeah.
Read Twilight. That's funny.
I can't confirm that, but I do know someone did that for a filibuster, or at least a showful filibuster.
Mm, okay.
Have you ever seen Parks and Rec?
Clips. Never watched the full thing. Okay. All I know is that Chris Pratt is pretty popular in there.
Yeah. A bit dirty, but... Actually, quite a bit dirty, but funny. Well, I just remember there's two clips in Parks and Rec where a filibuster is being used. But what I really gathered from that clip before doing any research, because I had known about this clip before doing extensive research, is a filibuster meant talking for a really long time, and you have to follow these rules. And if you break any of those rules, then, well, the filibuster fails, and the legislature can move on with passing the bill. And so we could even, I don't know, maybe we should check to see whether or not it's legal to share a little audio clip from Parks and Rec. We'll figure it out. And if it's here, we'll let you know. And if it's not, well, now you know.
How long have I been talking? 3 hours? No, 8 minutes. Okay.
The session ends at 11 p.m. She has to talk the whole time. She can't lean on anything for support, and no one else can help her. Three strikes, and she is done.
This is literally the most exciting thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah. So, Will, from your research, what year was the filibuster introduced to our...
Well... So, okay, there's two ways that you could say that the filibuster was introduced. The first is you can say the filibuster was actually introduced in the first legislature, in the first session in Congress. There are journal reports where it says the Virginians talked away the time so that the bill would not be passed. And it wasn't called a filibuster at that time, but that's probably the earliest example of the filibuster. It evolved over time into the word filibuster, derived from a Dutch word and the Spanish term for pirates, meaning you're basically just stealing away legislation. But most people say that the founding of the filibuster was in 1808. So Aaron Burr was the vice president at the time, and there were some rules that said, here's when you can end a debate to take a vote. And with his pressure, he believed that those rules could be taken away so that you can just so that you can have endless debate and the legislation would get passed anyways. Ultimately, what that meant is anyone can talk for as long as they want until the end of the legislative session and the bill won't get passed. And so that's how the filibuster was kind of introduced, and that's why a lot of people say that Aaron Burr is the father of the filibuster.
That's cool. The more you know.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add or anything else that you found?
No. Yeah. So I was looking at records. Like, we talked a little bit about the guy that filibustered for over 24 hours and 18 minutes. I did not write his name down. Did you perhaps do that?
I can find it very quickly.
There it is.
It was Jefferson Smith, right?
No, it was like Storm Thurmond.
Oh, yes.
There we go. So... Thurmond concluded his filibuster after 24 hours and 18 minutes at 9:12 p.m. August 29th, making it the longest filibuster ever connected in the Senate to date.
Yeah, and there are lots of pretty cool stories about the filibuster. I mean, there was the story about a person who was giving a filibuster, and he had been known to give very long filibusters. And he had actually been poisoned during that filibuster. And he still went 18 hours.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's not Thurgood, but it was the person who held the record before Thurgood did.
Yeah, Thurmond. That's still impressive. Thurmond. Yeah.
So, Chad, do you know how to end a filibuster?
Do you just stop?
Yes, that's one way. So there are a total of four ways that you can end a filibuster, and I feel like this is an important thing to cover because a lot of people talk about having the filibuster, but they don't talk about how you can actually get past one. So the first way, well, I guess, is the person gives up on the filibuster and mm-hmm. the law goes forward. Well, the bill goes forward with the vote and they figure out whether or not it's going to pass.
You stop. Isn't there like a majority as well?
Yes. That votes it out. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's called cloture or cloture. It's C-L-O-T-U-R-E. What that is, so in 1917, President Woodrow Wilson was very frustrated with the filibuster because it seemed like everything was being filibustered and nothing could get passed, nothing that he wanted to contribute to any efforts that he needed to get done. And so he was very frustrated. And so he called for this motion to have cloture with the filibuster. And what that said is that you needed a 2/3 majority and to... or 66 votes if everyone there is present in the Senate. And if you have all those votes, well, then you block the filibuster. But interestingly enough, I mean, it was only used like four times in 40 years.
Wow, that's crazy.
So they changed the rule, I believe, in the 1960s. It might have been late 1950s, where it became 3/5 or 60 of the senators, if all senators are present. And so if you were able to get all 60 or more votes, then you can file for cloture and you can pass the law. So that's the second way. The first way is you give up. The second way is you give cloture. The third way is called attrition, mm-hmm. which happened before cloture was really a thing. Attrition doesn't happen anymore, but if you had everyone there present, if the filibuster had a break or if there was something that broke, then if everybody called for a vote, then you would be able to get the vote done. It does not happen very often. And then the fourth thing is called tabling the bill, which is just giving up on the legislation. In other words, it means the filibuster won.
There you go. Some cool stuff. So a quick question I have for you. Do you know what the two-track system is? It was originally placed in the 1960s, the 1970s, under the leadership of Democratic leaders.
You'll have to explain it a little more to me.
Okay. So from what I've been reading, what it looks like is under the two-track system, the Senate can have two or more pieces of legislation or nominations pending on the floor.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's basically just a way to speedwalk legislation, where if you have, you just start multiple things at once. So you start the process for cloture, because cloture needs to happen a couple of days after the vote for cloture occurs. It needs to, I think it was 72 hours, either 48 or 72 hours. So you start mm-hmm. that and you start the legislation at the same time. And if you start those two things at the same time, well, then hopefully they overlap to where you can call for a vote at the same time cloture, the time for cloture is occurring. And okay. You can end the filibuster at once instead of waiting for a few days to end the filibuster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you don't do it and you're able to end the filibuster, you have to wait like an extra 3 days in order to actually take a vote on the bill. If you don't start this two-track, well, if you do start this two-track system, as soon as the filibuster is ended, then you can call for cloture and vote on the bill. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That's cool. And if you guys have any questions, just leave them down in the comments below. And we'll see if we could answer them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can actually start talking about some of the arguments for and against the filibuster, because this is a highly debated topic in the Senate, whether or not it should be existing.
Mm-hmm. And it goes between both parties, like back in 2008, 2007. Yeah, the Republicans saying we should get rid of the filibuster altogether. And then nowadays, you hear like Democrats saying that it's a threat to democracy.
Yeah, it goes like back and forth. Really, it depends on who's in the minority party.
Mm-hmm. So long as someone's in the minority, there's always going to be a question about the constitutionality of the whole filibuster stuff.
Mm-hmm. Before we hop into this discussion, though, have you heard of the nuclear option?
No, I haven't. Okay. What is it?
So the nuclear option is just really where you break procedure to pass the vote. For example, in 2007 and then in 2013, I believe. It was either 2013 or, 2013 and then again in 2017, the nuclear option was used to where before you could filibuster Senate nominations, but the nuclear option, well, you could say blew that up, to where you only needed a 51% majority in order to pass this the bill.
I have heard of that before.
And right, so
keep going.
Okay. As far as presidential nominations go, there's a whole bunch of background and drama that goes behind it. But in 2013, the Democrats chose to use the nuclear option to say, no, we don't want to filibuster a presidential nomination for a judicial position. And then in 2017, the Republicans were like, all right, well, we'll use that too.
That's pretty neat.
So just to review a timeline of everything that's happened. So the filibuster was first used in the first legislative session in 1789. And then cloture was introduced in 1917. And then cloture was amended in, it was 1975. So I was wrong in both being the 50s and the 60s. It was 1975. And then the precedent for cloture changed from 60 to 51, the simple majority, in 2017 and 2013. So that's a little bit about the overview. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the arguments.
What are some, I guess, affirmative arguments that you have found?
Alrighty, so these would be arguments in favor of keeping the filibuster, correct?
Yes.
Okay, well, the first thing, and this is the argument that you're going to hear most often, is that the filibuster keeps the right of the minority party in the Senate. So without the filibuster, the majority would always get their way, and the rights of the minority party would be gone. And you want to protect those minority rights because you don't want one party rule. Without the filibuster, you get that one party rule. And since you want to prevent that, the argument for keeping the filibuster is to make sure that the minority party keeps the rights, no matter which party is in control of the Senate. So that's the first big argument. The second big argument is, well, this makes sure that only bipartisan bills are passed. So if you keep the filibuster, and if a very partisan bill is presented where it would fall only on 50-50 lines, where you have all the Democrats voting for the bill and all the Republicans voting against the bill, the filibuster prevents that bill from passing just because of a simple majority. It makes sure that both sides are at least somewhat on board, because you need at least 60% or 3/5 of the Senate to agree with you. So the first thing is it keeps the rights of the minority party, and then it makes sure that only bipartisan legislation is passed. And then the third thing is that, well, it's a form of unlimited debate. That's how the filibuster was actually presented in the first place. It's because there was no rule to end debate, because the founders wanted to have debate. And so the filibuster is actually a reflection of that policy, of the founders' intentions to stay intact. So those are kind of the three policies in favor of keeping the filibuster.
Awesome. One of the negative arguments that I look at, so in order to pass a certain bill, you need a majority of 60% or 60 votes to pass a bill through. And what I see the negation going at it from that angle is that if there is a majority, if there's 56, 57, and you still can't get that bill to pass because there's one or two senators that don't want to budge, it could get hard to pass some bills that need to get passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where most people, at least like most people, will use that negation argument to get rid of the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main one that I saw. Are there any more negation arguments that you came across? That's just the main one that I thought of.
Okay, yeah. So there are a couple of other arguments that I know of as well. The first one is, well, the filibuster is not in the Constitution. That's the biggest one that is mentioned, is it's not written in there, and so it was not intended to be a part of legislation, and so it shouldn't be a part of there. The second biggest argument is that it can be used to prevent good legislation from actually happening. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the filibuster was used often in the 60s to prevent the Civil Rights Act from being passed, and not until they invoked the cloture rule, or they amended it to use the cloture rule more often, was the Civil Rights Act passed. So they actually had to narrow down the filibuster to make it actually possible for good legislation to occur. So that's the first thing, is it's considered unconstitutional by a lot of people because it's mm-hmm. not in the Constitution.
Second one is it's hard to get good legislation to pass through.
Exactly. So you really have this debate between passing good legislation or having the minority ensuring that they prevent bad legislation from happening. And so it's all about finding this balance, and there's these complications, but exactly as you were saying, the negation would argue that the minority shouldn't have the right to decide what kind of legislation gets passed just because a few people won't hop on board with this quote-unquote bipartisan bill. All right, well, we just want to thank everybody for all your support and your feedback and everything that you guys have helped us out so far, whether it's a little bit of financial support or just giving us some feedback on our episodes and how we sound and what we can do to sound better, or what we can do to be more presentable or provide better content.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love our Patreon subscribers. Like, they are the absolute best people I've ever met. I absolutely love them. Anyways, so if you guys haven't seen our Patreon yet, we've got three tiers that are out. They're incredible. You guys get different experiences with each tier that you subscribe to. So just check us out, Patreon, Two Man Congress. It's pretty simple from there.
Yep, so that's patreon.com/Two Man Congress, and that's spelled TWOMANCONGRESS. But we'll go ahead and hop right back into a little bit of the implications and what this might mean for you.
What implications could happen if the filibuster were abolished from our Senate?
Immediately? Or what kind of implications would happen with the current events going on?
For sake of simplicity, yes.
Okay. Well, let's just say that the Build Back Better would have passed. It may not have. We don't know, because Senator Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, both of them were Democrats, were on the fence with wanting to pass it because of some of the content in it and the price tag associated with it.
Also the fact that they're in fairly purple states.
Yes, but they weren't willing to throw away the filibuster to pass it. And so that's where you would see a lot more push to have these this kind of legislation passed by whichever party is in control if the filibuster was gone. Because you see that push with the filibuster still intact. So if it was gone, it would be an even stronger push. Mm. If it remains intact, you're going to see this debate coming back and back again. And you're going to see both sides going back and forth where they want to get something passed and they're just frustrated with the gridlock because they can't get it passed. And then the other party is like, yes, the filibuster. And then
it switches. No.
Yeah.
A decade passes and it's like the whole... Like, if they could watch themselves 10 years ago, like, it'd be completely different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what would happen if the filibuster were to stay intact and what would happen if it were to be dissolved.
Awesome. So how does this impact your average listener? What does the filibuster do for them? It's a hard question. I could share a few thoughts that I have while you're thinking.
Yeah, go for it.
So, as a listener, you can, even though you're not a senator and you're not going out there reading Twilight or Cat in the Hat or something like that, it's still good to know about why we have the filibuster, the history of it, so you have context on whether or not you believe it is constitutionally legitimate or if it should be in our Senate in general. And that's why it's important for you guys to know about it, and you guys could choose people that either support it, don't support it, when you decide to vote in the next couple of elections. And I think that's the main thing that people can take away from the filibuster and how they could use it in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I also think that there's a practical lesson that people can take away from the filibuster as well.
Like if you're annoyed with somebody, just keep talking to them. Bring out Twilight.
Well, I actually think in a legislative matter as well, where people can be involved with the legislature. But let me just walk you through this just to... give you an example of what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, in your opinion, and yeah. I know we don't like to share opinions very often because we want people to be as open-minded as possible. Do you support the filibuster or do you not?
For me...
And why?
Okay. So, it depends on the day. Like, no, just kidding. It sounds like a politician.
Depends on which party is in control.
Yeah, so when I look at the filibuster, I see the uses of both. And like both sides, like, we should get rid of it. We should keep it. And like for me overall... Even if it's an inconvenience for policies that I like, I'd prefer to have it in there as a safeguard. And it's kind of like when your parents tell you that you probably shouldn't go out smoking and drinking when you're like 13. It might be like, I never felt like I needed to do those things, but maybe you as a listener wanted to do those things. So... Even though that was annoying at the time, your parents put that in there for a reason, so that you didn't go off, make a mistake, and make life-changing things happen to you in one night.
So, in other words, you are leaning towards keeping the filibuster, but you can see the pros and cons of both arguments.
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to hear my opinion?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm a little torn, but I am leaning...
Yeah, I'm torn too. Like.
But I do lean towards keeping the filibuster, and let me explain a little bit why. Regardless of what party is in control, I don't want one party control. If Republicans are in control, I don't want the Republicans to make every legislative decision. And if the Democrats are in control, I don't want the Democrats to make every legislative decision. And then we rotate with each election. I don't think that's a good way of working out legislation. I think it's quite harmful because you're just going to have all this flip-flop back and forth of what legislation gets passed and then what legislation gets revoked. And it's going to be tedious if that were the case, if the filibuster were gone. With the filibuster there, what you have is gridlock, where you can't really pass legislative bills. And so really, you're picking and choosing your battles. Do you want this gridlock, or do you want one party control? And for me, I would prefer the gridlock. So that's kind of where I'm at with the filibusters. I would rather have gridlock.
You prefer to have like checks and balances to prevent overstepping certain powers in one party or the other.
Exactly. And so, but because I'm torn, I could see that there is a potential need for a rewriting of the rules. And not necessarily the filibuster rules itself, but possibly the closure rules, because you can't really have the filibuster without closure. And so I think this is actually where the application takes into place. I know that was a big buildup, but here's the full wraparound: is the filibuster has its strengths, has its weaknesses. Maybe not get rid of it, but you can make some amendments. And the reason why I say that is because the filibuster does not appear to be unconstitutional. Because even though it's not written in the Constitution, neither was the rule book for the Senate rules or procedures. Those things weren't in the Constitution either. Closure isn't in the Constitution. And so...
Fascinating.
And so because you have these things to make sure that legislation runs smoothly, there can be an amendment to these rules in a fairly simple way. And so I don't know exactly what those amendments would be, but quite possibly you could either lessen the number of senators required for closure. So that's one big thing. The other big thing that is a possibility is to make restrictions on when the filibuster can be used, as far as how close to the end of the legislative session or what kinds of laws don't require a filibuster. And I'm not saying using the nuclear option or things like that, but there are these other options out there that may make use of the filibuster more simplified to reduce the gridlock, but maintain that minority control in a sense to where you need to have bipartisan legislature in order for bills to pass. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So I think we covered just about everything that we wanted to in this episode. If you guys want to have us do a part two of the filibuster, because there is a lot of content, a lot of information that goes into the filibuster, if you guys want to learn more, just leave a comment. And we could do a
full-blown debate as well.
Mm-hmm. And we could explore this whole idea, because I don't think that we've probably covered maybe like an eighth of what goes into what the filibuster is, all the rules that the Senate has for the filibuster. So if you guys want to learn more about it, just leave a comment below and we could talk a little bit more.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a good place to end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys on the flippity flip next time.
See ya. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join LawSchoolersPro, and you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.